she's a good girl. Loves her mama, loves Jesus in America too. She's a good girl. She's crazy about Elvis, loves horses and her boyfriend too.
Hey everybody, my name is Joe Flesh, and joining me as always is Ryan. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you?
I'm all right, even though I said, how are you, Ewan? You joined us for episode number 17 of the Hobby Heroes Podcast. Fantastic new year, 2017, episode 17. It must be fate or some other nonsense. And on that, we're going to jump straight into the news because I feel like this is probably going to be a longer episode than normal. So
yeah, maybe.
First off, show format change. We're not actually changing the show format. We're adding one thing right now, but one of the constant issues, and anybody who does a podcast can commiserate with me on this, editing sucks. It's a huge pain in the butt. So we are going to try and structure ourselves more. I can't believe that it wouldn't have been noticeable, but we tend to freeform a lot. Like, we make small notes and then just kind of go with that. So we may sound a little bit like robotic or like we're on auto, but you know what? It's just going to make editing so much easier.
Yeah, good luck. I'm going to, you know, go with the flow.
Yeah.
That's what I do anyway.
I ought to teach you to edit. It's what I ought to do. So anyway, why don't you take us next part? And so we've got these bullet pointed out. Kings of War, heave ho.
Yeah, Kings of War, they got their international campaign day coming up. I guess by the time this is released, it'll be done. It's January 14th, 2017. This is the second one, I believe. Pretty neat little concept they got going here. They basically have over 50 sites from around the globe all participating in this one-day campaign. So in the U.S., it actually runs from noon to 7:30 p.m. Central Time, and there's a lot of different locations. I guess the closest one probably to us would be up in Chicago at Grognard Games. Shout out to Grognard. That is owned by Todd Warren. We've had him on the show. Been to one of his tournaments. Good guy. If you're in that area, check out his store. But I guess what you do is you just start playing games. So, you know, in New Zealand, they start earlier and start playing. And as the games go through, they affect what happens throughout that day. And at the end of it, based on all the results, you know, one side wins, good or bad. So the first one actually went well from what I heard. I didn't hear any sort of complaints or anything. Just all good news. And so I wish those guys good luck. And hopefully this one is great and they keep going with them. At some point I'm gonna try and get into one of these if I can ever get the time to do it.
Yeah, no kidding. Time is, you know, precious, and once you start having kids and jobs and everything else, you just never seem to have enough of it. But so yeah, it's like starting in New Zealand and then traveling east from there, or west from there. God, man, off night, I guess. So yeah, like every like section of the Earth, as it moves around, as their like thing wraps up, depending on who wins, good or evil, it will give a bonus to the next zone that plays. So by the time it gets to us, there'll have been like three zones that have played already, so it should be interesting to see what like the bonuses are at that point. But yeah, it went really well the first year and it just got way bigger this year. So I'm gonna maybe try and get this smashed out and released on Friday. That way, maybe last second people who are listening to it on Friday can still jump on for Saturday to do it, because I think it sounds like a really cool thing. It's just unfortunate we don't have the time. I've got scout things going on and yeah, never have enough time.
Yeah, that's a fact.
So I'll move on. Wild West Exodus. Yay! Toward Christmas, right after we record our last show, actually, like the next day, they showed a preview of two new models. It weren't actually models. It was concept art. So there was the Magenta Alpha for the Watchers, and a Marshall Bass, or Bass, probably Bass Reeves, for Lawman. I'm guessing it's Lawman. He's got the title Marshall, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, he is a Lawman. His card is actually available to be able to be viewed, so he is definitely Lawman.
Right on. I wonder if Magenta Alphas is on there already or not.
I will double check while you talk.
Sure. So also wanted to correct our discussion. So last time we were talking about the two previews of Legendary characters they made. They made the Legendary Walks Looking, and then the Legendary that we called it the Voodoo Lady from the Confederate Rebellions with the zombie snakes. We were wrong. It turns out she's a new character from a new faction called the Empire, and I'm going to go ahead and assume it's the British Empire. So it's actually like she apparently is like a commander of a submarine, And so if you look at the snake really close, it's actually a robotic snake. So really cool looking, and I'm really excited to see like what this British Empire thing leads to. I don't remember what show it was. I listened to another podcast where they interviewed the guys from Whalen, and they said they're looking to release like one or two things every couple, like every month or every other month, and then they're not looking to second edition until the end of the year. So
shout out to Gamers Lounge. That was the awesome podcast.
Thanks for the backup, Chief.
Yep.
So yeah, really excited to see what the Empire does and whether they start pushing that before second edition or if they're going to hold that off till second edition. You got some news for the Magenta Alpha?
Yeah, Magenta Alpha is up on the website. Go check it out. Now, this is just the card. Yeah, there's no actual model or anything. It can't be purchased, but the stats are there.
So you can play with it. Proxy away.
Yep.
More options, always good. Let's see, next thing. I guess I'll talk about this because this is, I'm all over this and you're not.
Yeah, this is Games Workshop and yeah, I don't want to.
Well, I mean, you can like them or not like them. That doesn't matter.
I'm going to zone out for a few minutes here.
Blood Bowl. I love Blood Bowl. Yay. So the Blood Bowl releases, they release these two referees. There's a goblin who's flipping a coin. He's got like a bag of money behind him and a halfling holding a giant sandwich. Those guys are out for release. They actually have some special rules in this month's White Dwarf. Special rules are pretty crazy, but if you look for them, you can find them. I'm not going to go over them. The Dwarf team isn't out yet, but that and the special play cards are due to release in early February. I think February 4th is the day. And the Dwarf team is going to be all in plastic, 12 players, $35. Amazing deal, considering the source, you know. And then we've also seen pictures of star players. We've seen Griff Oberwald, Varag Gulchur, Mighty Zug, and Morgan Thorg. And then also there was a picture from Open Day of a generic ogre. The one picture I've seen of all these on Griff, Varag, and Morg look pretty garbage to me. I think they could have done significantly better. The generic ogre looked okay, and the Mighty Zug looks freaking amazing. So hopefully there's better picks, and this is a case, you know, a classic GW case of, hey, the picks look garbage, but the models are actually good, because currently Mighty Zug is the only one I want out of those five models, and that's a real pity. So that's Blood Bowl news. Yay, Blood Bowl.
Hacha. So should we move on to what we've been doing?
What have you been doing? Not as much as me.
No, that's a fact. Hobby-wise, I've started painting on some Earth Elementals. I picked up some Reaper models. I don't remember what they're actually called, but they're I don't know, Earth Elemental size, and they're just big dwarves. One looks like a, you know, heavily armored dwarf. The other one looks kind of like a berserker. So I'm just painting them up as rocks. Easy paint job, easy peasy, and we'll get those done here shortly.
Those are good looking models too, and priced right, because they're from the Bones line.
Yeah, no, they're solid and they fit well. I mean, they're the right size and they look like normal dwarves, so can't go wrong with those. But that's pretty much it for me.
Well, you sold a high elf army, man. That counts. Yeah, sort of counts.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting out of my collection here, at least trying to get down on the collection
slowly but surely.
Way too much stuff, so you know how the market is for Warhammer stuff right now, so I was just thrilled to actually find someone that wanted it.
Yeah, AOS is picking up steam, apparently. I don't know. So, Christmas come and gone. Did you get anything for Christmas, Skaven? Hobby-wise?
No, not hobby-wise.
Yeah, we've long passed the point of my family buying me anything for my hobby. At this point, if I want something for Christmas for hobby, it's, you know, Santa Claus's gift.
Yeah, well, and at this point, I'm so impatient that I just go and buy it. And so by the time Christmas comes around, there's really not much that I need.
Yeah, fair enough. So I got Santa got me the Death Zone and Skaven teams for presents. Nothing else hobby-wise, though, so no shock there. I have started playing in a second Blood Bowl league with a pile of local guys. So these are all guys that like used to play back in the day, and almost none of them play games anymore. At least not miniature games. So we managed to pull together 16 players, which, unless you're from our area, you don't have any idea how big of a deal it is to actually pull 16 players out of something. So we got 16 guys. My first game was I'm playing my dwarfs, and because so many guys are new and they're playing all humans and orcs from the box sets. So I was like, well, I guess I'll play my dwarfs because I don't have the Skaven together or painted yet. So my first game was against Skaven, which was awesome. I pulled it to a draw because my dice hate me. I should have really won that game. Like second half, he had 5 guys left on the field to my 11. So it's just, you know, trying to throw a quick pass, needing a 3, can't get it with rerolls. Ball happens to bounce right where he needs it. runs in, makes a dodge roll on like a 5, picks up the ball on a 6, long bombs the ball on a 6, and catches the stupid ball and runs it in because Skaven. And then I just finished the game tonight, Dwarf on Dwarf, playing our friend Pete Ward. He got brutalized in the first round, lost 3 dudes. 2 of them actually dead, 1 of them just missing this game. Just brutal in the first round for him. And then I won that one 1-0 because Dwarfs on Dwarfs is just a grind fest of horror. Beyond that, I finished painting the Orc Blood Bowl team, and you've seen the pictures of those. They look so good. So great models there. I've been preparing my Dwarfs for the Holy Wars GT, which, you know, I'm cheating on my friends here and going to play AOS for a weekend. But it's more to hang out with my friends because apparently Holy Wars has a deal with the hotel because I guess they don't have an on-site like restaurant, that it's actually BYOB. So apparently we have multiple friends who just like have rolling coolers that they sit on while they play games, and that sounds like an amazing environment for fun, regardless of the game that you're playing. And on that token, I went to Peoria and played some games of AOS with some friends. I won 2 out of 3 and did fairly well. So, you know, I'm just going to go up there, drink, have a good time, and try to win like 1 or 2 games and be good with that. And then last thing. Is this last thing? Looks like last thing. So I track my games every year, like the games I play. And I try and play 52 games a year. That's like 1 per week. And I consider that my justification. If I can do that, I can justify the amount of money I piss away on our hobby, which is significant. Less significant in the last couple of years, other than conventions, because I just don't buy models as much anymore. But it's a lot. And this year I played 63 games. So not only did I beat the 52, I beat it by more than 10. I'm super happy because I've only done that a couple times, and like I've been tracking it since 2008. So in 7 years, I've only done that like 3-4 times maybe. So super happy about that. And if you're interested in the actual breakdown, you can go check out the blog post. I went through that. I think Kings of War came out definitely on top. I think I had like 53 games of that. And then Wild West Exodus, I think, was in second place, somewhere in the mid-teens. So obviously a lot more Kings of War. I think that has to do with more tournaments that we went to. You know, I mean, we went to a tournament for Wild West Exodus, but we did the team tournament for Kings of War, the Adepticon tournament for Kings of War, then we did Dragonfall for Kings of War, and then we did our little mini campaign. You know, so we did a lot of Kings of War. We're going to try and even that out this year with Wild West Exodus a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to track my games. I think I would just be very depressed at the lack of games that I play.
See, I have to try and justify my hobby to myself, and that's just kind of how I do it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, like I said, though, I just don't get the chance to play enough. Going to the cons does help, but I guess we should mention that we're not actually going to Adepticon this year. We've decided to skip on that and maybe hopefully hit a different one at some point this year.
Yeah, I'm going to take a brutal hit on that because Acon is usually like 16 games.
Yeah, you do the full load there. It's usually just 3 or 4 for me. I guess about maybe 6. Two tournaments of 3, but you go balls out.
Yeah, it was 14 games last year for me at Adepticon. So, yeah, that's going to set me back a wee bit. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not one of those people, as I say this and I realize I do track this, I'm not one of those people that's like, I have to win all my games to justify this hobby. I do try to win more than I lose, and this year I barely made it. I think I won like 51% of my games, so still doing good, but...
But you're not going to quit if you have year that you don't. I mean, so it's nice to win, but it's not... Yeah. You don't have to win.
It is certainly not the most important thing to me. Our hobby is a hobby. And
right.
You know, at this point in our lives with the kids and the careers and my entire family being so involved in scouting, it's a struggle just to keep the hobby going.
I hear that.
So,
as you can tell from my lack of what I've been doing since this show started.
I don't think it helps that you live half an hour away from the game stores.
That's true. Well, and I also have an 8-month-old where your youngest kid's, what, 8?
Yeah, that's 9? True. You have newborn, so, or no, close enough to newborn. And Dave's kid isn't exactly ancient. How old is
he? He's 2 now, isn't he? I think, yeah.
And she's pregnant with another one, so, yeah, he's about to be completely taken out of the hobby, I bet.
He's about to get shut down.
Oh, sad days, sad days. Good thing I'm in all these Blood Bowl. It's the only game that I'm going to get. But let's move on to our new segment. This one has me pretty excited. This is something we came up with for this year. We've talked about doing it before and decided that this would be the good time to do it, the new year, the new bits. So at one point, there was another podcast I listened to during Warhammer 8th Edition. I don't remember what the show was, but they had a segment called The Pit. And what they would do is they would take a hero versus another hero, stick them in like a 28-inch circle on the table, and they would actually fight it out. We thought it'd be kind of fun to do something like that and run like a gunslinger tournament. Like, you know, I was thinking, in my mind, I was like the movie The Quick and the Dead, even though obviously it doesn't work that way because no matter how awesome you are, you're not going to kill somebody in a single shot in this game. So we just wanted to do that. So we built a bracket of 12 characters, and the reason we did... Well, let me change that. I built a bracket of 12 characters. Ryan and I had to discuss on what we actually wanted to do. So we don't know if this is going to change or not, really. But preliminarily, this is where we're at. And what we're going to do is the first 6 months, so through June, you know, they're going to pair off and fight. Then July, those winners will pair off and fight through September. In October, we're going to have three dudes left. Or no, I'm sorry. In October, we'll have three fights. And then November, we'll have odd. We'll have three players left standing. So my original idea is to take, you know, two off and then pull a wild card from the round of losers, either by listener vote or, you know, maybe we'll look back and see who did the most damage in their fight but still lost. And then December we'll see like the final shootout. So it's a pretty cool idea, I think.
No, it'll be interesting. I think that the matchup is going to be real important on this to see who gets who, because some characters are just better than others when it comes to shooting, and some people's weapons are just better than others. So, and it'll be interesting. And then you're always going to have that guy, or at least we think there's going to be this one game down the road where someone's just going to have terrible dice or super hot dice, and someone's just going to get a bad beat. And so that's where the wild card comes in, and we can then bring them back in and give them that second chance.
Yeah, because, I mean, that this game is swinging. Like, so many of our games that we play of this are, you're doing fine, and then you roll a one on armor roll, and your dude's half dead, and you're like, God, no!
Oh, roll that 10 on irradiate, and there goes your boss.
We'll get to that later. So the idea was, we'll build, like, a small main street with buildings on both sides, like a fountain at an end, and a gals the other is what we ended up with. There'll be a little terrain scattered around, because we do want to give a chance for hand-to-hand fighters to come participate. So like Sitting Bull and all the hand-to-hand dudes, we want them to get in here too. Obviously, they're going to have limited, if any, shooting capability. So we want to make sure that they can get behind some cover to get to the gunslinger. So I'm like genuinely really excited about this, because I think it sounds like a lot of fun to me. And so we're going to go over the roster of participants here, and then we're going to go over the first fight, which because we record over Skype, we're not going to like roll the dice live on the show. Other than I find dice rolling on a podcast really irritating.
Pretty slow. Yeah, I'm not a big fan either.
So first, let's go ahead and go through the list here. So I didn't send this to you.
Nope, so why don't you read it off?
Month one, Jesse James versus Wyatt Earp. Month two, Abe Lincoln versus Stonewall Jackson. Number three is Gustav Eiffel versus Nikola Tesla. And that's going to be really interesting, because you're going to end up putting a mech in the game. Four is Sitting Bull versus Tainted Walks Looking. Then we got Pancho Villa versus the Viridian Alpha. And finally, Dr. Carpathian versus Sirkan Nura, which is the Holy Order. So that's our initial lineup. This month, we have Jesse James versus Wyatt Earp. So let's take a look at what they have on their cards.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and start with Wyatt. I'll just kind of give you the, you know, the nuts and bolts here.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's 205 points, quickness 4 with 4 AP, marksmanship of 3, and then 3 armor. But he has the defensive shield, which always gives him intervening and taking cover. So that'll give him the bonus to the armor. As far as weapons, he has a 11-inch shotgun, POW 12, and then the 24-inch Peacemaker, POW 9, with a rate of fire 2. So good if I can get within the 11. I might be in trouble if I can't close in on Jesse.
Yep. So Jesse James is 200. He has quickness of 6, so he's a little faster. 3 AP, marksman of 3, same as you. 2 armor, so not as armored, especially without that shield. And weaponry speaking, he has 2 hypervelocity pistols with a rate of fire 2, which are accurate, POW 10. So I'm getting 4 shots per action point. And then he has the option of once per turn throwing a heat blast out, which is an action point at 24 inches, becomes POW 14 with thermite rounds into 3-inch blast template, which doesn't do anything to single model. Only 1 shot from that thing. Pretty neat. And then, you know, we've got all these special abilities, but I don't think any of these are really going to come into it. I guess if you got in hand-to-hand, I could quick draw you, but I could do that anyway. And then I guess if you somehow kill me on the way down, when you hit 0 lifeblood, Jesse James gets a single shoot attack. So if you kill me, I could maybe take you out depending on where your health is.
Yeah, and then we should also say that the way that we did influence is we just made influence for the entire fight. It doesn't refresh every turn. So for in White's case, he has 2 influence. He gets that for the entire fight, and then he's done.
Holy crap. Jesse James, I played with his old card, has 4. They've upped him to 5 influence on his new card. Woof.
Nice.
That dude's amazeballs now. Anyway.
To start out, I won initiative. So we started 18 inches apart. We figured that was standard. You know, most people have a 24-inch range. Some people have less, like Wyatt 11, so he's going to have to move if he wants to get there. So I started first. My thought was, based off of Jesse's guns, like, I have 2 shots, range 24, POW 9. He gets 4 shots, POW 10 at range 24. So for me to do anything, I'm going to have to get within range of the shotgun and hopefully set him on fire and count on some extra damage there. So I moved up and then took, I think, 1 shot at him, ended up doing about 3 damage in first turn.
Yep. So based on that same theory, you know, Ryan's going, I'm going to have to get into shotgun range. Jesse did the cowardly outlaw thing and moved backwards behind some barrels so that he could get some cover. And then just took a bunch of pistol shots, you know, 2 AP, 8 pistol shots away into Wyatt's face. And I did 5 damage to him.
Turn 2, I won initiative again. Same strategy, you know, go forward because I can't just sit here 24-inch range and win a firefight. I gotta get within the 11. So I moved forward again, took another shot with the Peacemaker. Only actually did 1 damage this time, so not a very good turn for Wyatt.
Yep, you tried to get there for the shotgun, and you walked out of behind. Now you're just out in the open, but you have that stupid shield, so
yeah,
didn't matter. So again, I did first action, I did some shots, got 6 damage on you. Then I pulled out the heat blast, which you rolled a 9, I think, so you only took 1 more damage out of it, even though it was POW 14. And then finally, that last action, you had moved forward, and then I think you... Did you try to shoot the shotgun that turn and didn't have the range?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, I used an action to shoot, and I was, I think, at like 13 inches or something, so it was just the Peacemaker of what I could shoot. So I didn't think I was in range, and so instead of moving that extra action and not being able to fire, I thought it was best to go ahead and at least take a shot and chance it.
Yeah. So knowing, because I remember now at this point, like, I was like, oh, yeah, you're almost there. So again, I moved backwards. Turn 3, Jesse James gets the initiative this time. Pulls a heat blast first thing, going big. Go big or go home. Does 5 damage. And then I proceeded with the next 2 action points just to pepper Wyatt until he was dead into the ground. So, yeah.
Pretty decisive win for Jesse.
Right. So, afterthoughts.
Afterthoughts, you ran away. I thought it was supposed to be like a high noon shootout, and you ran away. So apparently you and I are playing with different rules here. And this is where it gets back to just matchups, because there was no way I was going to win this based off how we played it, because I only have quickness 4. Right. Granted, I have 1 more action point, but we still have the same amount of movement. Your movement, quickness 6 with 3 action points is the same as my quickness 4. I guess yours is even a little bit more because math is hard. But, so there wasn't a way that I was going to win this based on on how it was played. So I did the best that I felt that I could, but I was just outmatched, outclassed.
Yeah, I won because of chicken shit tactics, backing up and staying in cover. And I can't argue, you know, you bring up a good point. It is supposed to be shootout-esque, but with the disparity in, like, weapon powers, I'm not sure how that's going to work. This whole thing is an interesting idea, but we're probably going to have to modify it as we move along. I think next time we may just have to sit there and literally blast away at each other, or maybe modify our gun ranges so that someone isn't left having to move to try and get shots off.
Yeah, I was thinking something, maybe close it off, like just make it 18-inch so you can't go back. Maybe you can go to the side, kind of like, I guess maybe like the pit you were saying earlier, where it's closed in. So no matter what, the farthest you can get away is 18 inches.
That's not a bad idea.
So maybe try that.
I mean, we were playing in a corridor. Eventually we'd got to the end of it, but yeah, because it was significantly long enough, I think you're right. Probably have to actually close ourselves. And we're open to ideas. If anyone has ideas about, you know, how maybe we can make this more fair, let us know. You know, as we talk about weapon levels and power levels of that, you know, if you listen to it when I said the brackets, I didn't even take a look at weapons. I basically paired off guys that I thought would fight each other. You know, Jesse James versus Wyatt Earp, the consummate outlaw versus the lawman, Abe Lincoln versus Stonewall Jackson, you know, the Confederates versus Rebellion, Eiffel versus Tesla, Sitting Bull versus the evil version of Walks Looking, so the Dark Nation. And then those last four just didn't really have matchups, like Pancho Villa, the Alpha Alien, Carpathian, and the Holy Order Lady. Like, I don't know any of the background for those particular groups, so I don't. And they just didn't really have, I think, matchups to go with each other. I don't know. So, I mean, that's just kind of where that's at. It's a really neat concept.
We're just going to work it out. I mean, this is bound to happen at some point, so I'm kind of glad that it happened in the first one so that we can kind of keep an eye on it going forward.
Yeah, no kidding. But I'm pretty excited to do it still. It's still fun.
I am too. I mean, I can't lose them all, right? At some point, I got to win. maybe I'll play Jesse next round.
There you go. And from there, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with our main topic, which is Wild West Exodus.
Sweet dreams are made of these.
All right, we're back. Wild West Exodus. We've decided, in the spirit of narrative gaming, to play the narrative scenarios, because now we have the narrative scenarios to play. So the big hardback rule book that pretty much nobody buys, because the gamer rule book is like $20 instead of 50 or whatever, it has 10 narrative scenarios in it. And, you know, we've been playing the game for, what, 3 years now, I think? And we've never touched a narrative scenario out of that book. So
has it been 3 years?
Yeah,
I guess probably. So.
If not three, then awfully close.
Yeah, that's fair.
So for this scenario, we are doing scenario number two, Bushwhack.
A great Daniel Stern movie if you've never seen it.
Never seen it. Maybe I'll have to look that up.
Great is a relative term. If you haven't seen it, you're probably not missing much.
Nice. So the first go is we're playing at $750. The book says, of course, you can place at any point value you'd like, but we went with $750. And narratively speaking, like, there's, you know, a little paragraph of kind of what this is about. And one gang is traveling along a dirt road, basically, and then gets ambushed by the other player. So we have an even number of points in our armies, but then deployment gets funky. So the defender, who is caught in the open, has a 36-inch by 12-inch rectangle, which is like dead in the center of the board. And it's a regular 6-foot by 4-foot board. And the closest a defender can get to a board edge is 18 inches. The attacker, on the other hand, after the defender completely sets up their army, the attacker then gets to set up anywhere around him he wants, within 12 inches of any board edge. So it's impossible for an attacking model and a defending model to be as close as 6 inches to each other. But there's a lot of rocks, a lot of bushes and shrubs, some trees, blah, blah, blah. And we could also, in fact, this is something that neither of us did, really. We could have, well, I don't think you had the option unless you spotted me, but I could have deployed prone or on the lookout. Any of my guys could have done that, and I just completely didn't think of it, because first go at one of these narrow scenarios, we hardly, you know, well, that, and we haven't played a lot of Wild West Exodus recently, so we really weren't 100% on our rules at the time. So during deployment, if at any point one of my models is deployed within 12 inches and line of sight of a defending model, then the model can take a marksmanship test, and I think it was like +2, so in this game, +2 is negatives, really. And if you pass the test, you see me. The rest of my attackers who weren't set up yet become reserves, and then at that point, I think you get to go prone if you want with anybody you want. But
right.
That didn't come up because I didn't deploy within 12 inches of any of your dudes. And you chose to be the defender. I guess we didn't say that yet. You won the roll off and chose to be the defender, to be fair. And so I had two Iron Horse bikes, which immediately go in reserve because all light support from the attacker starts in reserve.
Yeah, I took Enlightened. I'll go ahead and go over my list and then kind of give my explanation of why I went for the defender.
You betcha.
So my list was Dr. Carpathian as the boss, and then I had Creation 7, Vladimir Ursel, John Younger. It's now called Gatling Construct. It used to be called Creation 13. For the purposes of this podcast, I will probably call it Creation 13 because I will forget. And then I got two close combat hired hands and one long range hired hand. So the way that the scenario ends is one side gets tabled. You know, you fight to the model. And if I win, I win. And, you know, if you destroy all of my guys, you win. So with Carpathian, he can bring back both of the creations, 7 and 13. So my thought was he's got 5 influence, and he can bring back those two guys. So I got a fairly good shot of being able to bring those creations back and sticking around a while, as long as I can keep Carpathian alive. So that's why I chose the defender. I thought it was more of an uphill battle because I had to deploy everything first, and then you got to cherry pick. So I thought it would be a nice little test to see how this army goes.
Right. So I took Jesse James, Frank James as a backup, Cole Younger, Zerelda Kincaid, a K-9 unit, 5 long-range hired hands, and 2 Iron Horse jet bikes with rifles. So I basically, I wanted to outnumber Ryan, regardless of whether I was going to be attacker or defender. So I took all these hired hands, just on the quantity over quality type idea. And then I definitely wanted Zerelda, because I didn't know, when I first played the list, I didn't know what Ryan was playing. And I wanted the Irradiate to deal with those stupid law bots. And then Cole, just because he's cheap. And then I ended up with $25 left over, and the only thing at $25 is a K9 unit, so I took him. I want to say that, you know, I think we both took pretty varied lists, and on that point, we both intentionally took not, like, retarded things. I intentionally avoided taking the Capelli sisters, because I know that the rocket launcher chick and them making the K9s what they make them is pretty rough times. I chose not to, like, put rocket pods in the iron horses. I chose to take hired hands over, you know, anything that was significantly better.
Yeah, pretty much everything.
Yeah, yeah. But I definitely wanted the iron horses, because, I don't know, you know, in those Western scenes, there's always a couple guys on horseback, and I was like, I should have horses.
And it was an ambush, too, so it makes sense to kind of have some scouts, if you will, some quick movement to say they're over here, boss.
Yeah, right, right. So you won, and you chose defender. Which
I won the roll for deployment.
Yep.
I didn't win. No. Spoiler.
So turn one, I get to go first because I was the attacker, and that's just the narrative scenario. So turn one, this uses reserves reinforcements. So anything that was in reserves, both my iron horses, because of the way the deployment worked. On a turn, instead of activating my 1-3 models, I can choose to bring in reinforcements. So I pick 1-3 models who are off the board and roll the dice. And on a 4+, which is influenceable, I can bring on those reserves from a board edge specified by the map. In this case, it was the really long table edges, the 72-inch edges. And they get a spin. It takes an action point just to contact the edge of the board. And then you can continue to use them. So I chose to bring in the bikes. I thought, oh, narratively speaking, this is cool. All my guys started the game pretty much out of line of sight of Ryan. And I thought it'd be kind of narrative if the first thing that Carpathian, you know, tips him off to there being an ambush is they're going down the road and suddenly he hears bikes. And I was like, ah, that's kind of narrative. I like that. So the bikes came on. I got that 4+, and one came on each side. One shot at John Younger and missed, because they only have 2 AP, so one was just to get on the board, and then two was to shoot. And then the other one shot, one shot John Younger for 1 damage, and then the other one shot at Creation 7. That's the big one, right?
Yeah.
And missed, so that was my exciting first action.
Mine wasn't much better. I took a one of my hired hands and actually shot down and killed one of your hired hands. So, you know, first blood to me.
Boo.
And then Creation 7 just kind of took off marching towards the trees, a set of trees where Jesse and Cole were hiding out. The way that the Creation 7 works is that the start of his activation, you roll a dice. On an 8+, he gets 4 action points. Anything less, he only gets 2. That action phase, I only got 2 action points. So he got close, but wasn't able to actually do anything. And so that was my first two guys. All of Joe's stuff was pretty well hidden out of sight, so didn't have a whole lot of shots to take.
Yup. So, revenge! My hired hand started shooting at Ryan's, killed one of them, and then did 3 damage to another hired hand, which, this is horse hockey. Stupid and light and hired hands still have 6 health, and that's balls.
Because they're like zombies, man.
Everybody else's hired hands got taken down to like 4 and gets single shotted. I actually have to put effort into killing yours. That sucks. Frank James, he was behind this hill with some rocks, so he went up to the top of the hill where the rocks were. I deployed him so poorly. He should have just started on top of the damn hill on the lookout, and instead I put him behind the hill like an idiot. So wasting action points to get up there. And he shot at Creation 13, but whiffed.
All right, so my go. I took one of my other hired hands and just kind of charged towards one of Joe's. It was just a close combat guy, so I just took both action points to move. Didn't get close enough to do anything. Vlad shot Frank. Did a lot of damage. And then Creation 13, the Gatling construct, also shot into Frank, who was just kind of hanging out there on the rock. He did have cover and intervening, but he was pretty much the only guy I could see at that point. So we hammered him pretty good, and almost killed him. Well, he brought him down to one health.
Oh, yeah. One health. You know what? That is one of the things that stands out to me is this game, because of how swingy it is rolling the one for the arm rolls, you're always like, oh, God, I took 9 damage. And then on the same token, it seems like every game there's one or two models that are left at one health for like 2 turns that they shouldn't be. They should be dead, and instead they're still floating around.
Yeah, there is. It always seems to end up that way.
So, yeah. So, poor Frank, you know, bleeding to death, but still alive. My shot, I took another hired hand, shot at 13. By the way, congratulations on remembering it. It's called the Gatling Construct now.
Yeah.
Did 2 damage to him. Cole shoots it shot it as well for another 1 damage. 7 and 13, don't they have like 4 armor? So much armor.
7 has 4 and 13 has 2.
So much armor. And then I had a hired hand who was sitting in a forest, like to the back of Vlad Ursel. So he shot at him, didn't he? I think I hit him, but didn't do any damage because you rolled some pretty hot armor rolls for him for our first couple turns.
Yeah, he was pretty nice. And so then on, I guess it was
third activation for you.
Third activation. I didn't really do much. I think I moved Carpathian kind of just around the rock in the middle, just so my back wasn't exposed, kind of positioning him to kind of go after Jesse with Creation 7. But other than that, I shot at your bike, the bike that came in that way, and just blew the hell out of that thing.
Yeah, you did. His gun is tits.
Yeah, it's only power 12, but it's like a blast 5, radiate, thermite round, so just a solid shot. I think you rolled a 1 for armor.
Yep.
And that's all she wrote.
That was the one that took damage from Creation. You shot with Creation 7, I think, earlier. Like when he walked towards Frank or towards Jesse and Cole, you got like most of the way there, but you had an AP left that wasn't going to get you anywhere good, so you shot at it and did some damage. And then, yeah, Carpathian killed it off. So, turn 2. Good guys win the initiative roll. That's me. Yeah. So Frank, bleeding to death, is like, I got to get my action in before it all goes down. Oh, you know what? I forgot my last activation. Zerelda gave her action points to the K-9 unit next to her, and the K-9 went running over to John Younger and did a couple damage. I don't remember. Not a lot. And then you punted the dog in the head, which heavily influencing I managed to not fall down. But still, he did, I think, like 3 or 4 damage to John Younger.
You complain all the time about my armor, but those dogs are
ridiculous.
Those
dogs are retarded.
They just stick around way longer than they should ever have any right to stick around.
They do live ridiculously well. So I won the initiative. Frank shoots at Vlad Ursel, does 2 damage. K-9, who was already there, tears into John Younger, who takes him down to, I think, like 3 health left. Jesse then shot at Creation 7, did 2 or 3 points of damage, and then with his last action point, detonated the K-9 unit to kill John Younger. Yeah.
Boom.
I think that's the first time I've ever intentionally blown one of those up, but I was like, you're close enough, and you had the K-9 down to like 2 health at that point, and I'm like, if I don't do it, the K-9's going to go down with nothing good to say, and I'm like, the K-9 has to kill him. So,
yeah, the K-9 boom. Was going down either way if John got to activate, so you made the right move there.
And it's just kind of a cool concept. Like, you know, here comes this dog rushing out of the woods, jumps up on this dude, and it's like, ar, ar, ar. And then, you know, you're fighting him off, and you finally get him off, and the dog's like, ah. Just seems fun.
Yeah, it was great fun. But my activation, both Vlad and 13 went back into Frank, and just completely just biffed it.
Woo!
Frank was on 1 life, and I just couldn't get that through. But I had a better luck. I ran 7 into Oof. Jesse. He got the extra actions this turn and basically took him down, except I think 2 health. So damn near killed him in one go.
God, the buzzsaw and the drill, man. Just POW 10 and POW 12 armor pierces. Jesse's got no armor. You just tore him up. You did like 20 points of damage or something crazy. Yeah, you left him at 2 health.
And that's an update to the card, is they gave him 2 strikes now. He used to just have 1 strike. So they recently updated him to get 2 strikes. So that's how I was able to beat down on you.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. So, Hired Hand for me. This is second activation of turn two. Hired Hand killed another one of Ryan's Hired Hands. And this whole time, this one Hired Hand who's still sitting in that forest behind Vlad, just shooting away at his back, gets two more damage on him. And that dude sitting in that forest is going to come into play pretty much every turn. Like, he was heavily camouflaged, I guess.
Your Hired Hands are pretty good. I mean, damage-wise, they get quite a few shots, and they just weren't ever worth, like, actually killing for me. And it ended up biting me pretty big at the end.
Yeah, I mean, they're the Raiders, so they get two shots per action point. They only have two action points, but if they're sitting there with a 24-inch range, I mean, that's four shots a turn. It's only pow 8, but you're bound to bone and armor roll eventually.
All right, so mine, so I was incorrect earlier. It was just Vlad that biffed his rolls against Frank, because my second activation, 13, actually kills Frank. He finally gets the damage through. The Hired Hand charged into your Hired Hand.
Yeah.
And somehow I lost this. I don't even know how. Like, my close combat guy lost to your free strike friggin' long range guy.
It was amazing. Yeah, you like came in, swung at me, whiffed. I get my free strike, hit you, did a couple points of damage. You swing at me again, biff again, and then I killed you with my crappy POW 6 Bowie knife. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was something.
And these were my long range dudes that need like a 7 plus to hit.
Yeah, they were freaking on all damn game. Like, these guys are your MVPs. And then Carpathian just blew the hell out of one of your other hand-to-hand guys.
Yeah, turned him into a puddle of goo.
Yeah, and then that was it for me.
So last activation of turn two, Hired Hand shot at Vlad again for nothing on this one. Cole did 3 damage to Gatling Creation. And Zerelda walks up on the hill, bold as brass, and shoots Creation 13, irradiates him, doing 1 damage. And then my other Iron Horse shot and did nothing, proving that the Iron Horses still suck balls.
All right, so turn three.
And that pause for Ryan means that Joe won the initiative yet again.
Yeah.
So good on the initiative rolls this game. So I win. Jesse being locked in combat, yay for close work. Because if I was left to hand-to-hand weaponry, I would probably have lost this. but close work, I get to shoot him in hand-to-hand combat, so I just blasted Creation 7 in the face. You hit Jesse, and with the drill, you ignore my armor. It's POW 10. I literally need a 10 on the dice to stay alive. So I used all of Jesse's influence, all 4 of it at the time, because I was using the old card, and managed that 1-10 that I needed.
Yeah. That was a pretty cool moment. I'll give you that. It's just like, come on, big money, no whammies. And
you
got it. So it was a good time there.
It was. It was pretty, because it was a really do or die moment. It's like, oh my God, if I don't get the 10, he's totally toast. And then Jesse took a second action point, killed Creation 7 with his guns. Hired Hand shot Vlad again. This is the guy hiding in the forest, takes him down to 1 health. And then Zerelda hits Carpathian. Doesn't get through his armor, because he gets +2 armor against shooting, which is woof.
Yeah.
But she does irradiate him, which plays a big part coming up here.
Yeah. So on my turn, Vlad shot the bike, did 4 damage. 13 passed the irradiate test, so he's good to go, and then killed a Hired Hand. Carpathian did not pass the irradiate roll.
Woof.
Even with influence. And rolled a big 10. So, whammo. Slapped across the face for 10 damage. And that right there was really a game changer, because now he's almost dead. And he's still kind of out in the open, because the whole ambush thing, there really wasn't much terrain to start with to hide behind. And I started out in the open. So now I'm starting to sweat it a little bit. Before that, I thought I was looking pretty good. But after that, Carpathian then, you know, sacks up, goes and kills Jesse. And then brings Creation 7 back up using his reanimation.
But Jesse doesn't go down. Not without a last shot. Because Jesse James always gets the last laugh. So when Jesse James hits 0 lifeblood, he gets to take 1 shot with any weapon at anybody. So going down to Carpathian, he put the big gun into him. POW 14. And took Carpathian down to one health.
Yeah. So I got, I think it's Vlad at one health, Creation 13 at two health, Creation 7's back up with one health, and then Carpathian's at one health. So yeah, it's looking quite fancy for the Enlightened right now.
Yeah, it, you're right. The Irradiate roll on Carpathian was a huge game changer.
Yeah.
So my turn, shot at Creation 7 with Cole Younger, did nothing. I needed one damage to bring him back down, couldn't make it. The bike shot at Vlad and whiffed, still proving bikes are useless.
And then the only thing I had left was Creation 7, who had just gotten back up, gotten reanimated. So he ran over, put the smack down on Cole Younger, and I think he gave him, what, he had three health left by the time it was over. Yeah. But he did live, and that's important.
It is important. So turn four, who wins the initiative again? Joe Not wins this the guy. Initiative again.
Yeah,
but this turn, initiative. This turn it was so close because we both rolled ones, but I had saved an influence from the previous turn.
You rolled a one first, like you rolled your initiative and like one. I was like, oh yeah, and then bam, here comes that other one for me, and I'm just like, are you kidding me?
Oh, it was great. So Cole has no options. Like, he can either try and get away from Creation 7 to shoot him because he's not fighting him in hand to hand, or he can just stand there and die. So I'm like, well, he's not going to be, his physical ability is like a 7-2. It's garbage. And he's got like a POW 6 Bowie now. I'm like, you're not going to get through the 4 armor. So I was like, I got to take a chance. He leaves the halo, gets lucky and passes the physical ability check, turns around, shoots him down. Yeah. The Iron Horse shot Vlad again for 0. And then that heavily camouflaged hired hand in the woods, who's been shooting at Vlad every turn, shoots him in the back and finishes him off.
And this one was like, I get 4 shots, needing 8, 4 hits. And I'm like, hey, what? Like, come on, man. So my turn, 13 just shoots at Cole this time and I guess takes him down to 1. I should have actually probably went in and... No, I did go in. I was in the halo, wasn't I? And beat you in the face?
I don't remember. I think, yeah, I think you walked into me and hit me.
Yeah. But, and then I ended up spending 4, 4 influence to make sure that Carpathian passed the radiate check, which he did.
We're going
to
do that again, huh?
And then, oh, that's what it was. He passed the check and then he shot Cole Younger and killed him with his, and then used his final influence to get the Creation 7 back up again.
Yeah, there you go.
But to do that, to like, because Carpathian now has to be within 12 inches. They updated his card. It used to just be line of sight. Now I got to be 12 inches. So to do that, I actually like had to come out more in the open than I already was. So it was a gamble. Let's see how it pays off, Cotton.
So my last hired hand, who's still alive. No, I guess I had 2. One was hiding in some rocks, and then there's the one that killed Vlad. So the one in the rocks takes 4 shots, Carpathian. 3 hits, 2 lethals. Puts Carpathian down like the dog he is. And then Zerelda, standing on the hill, takes down Creation 13.
Yeah, and then I still had 7 because he had just gotten up, and so I just ran him towards the bike. He was the closest thing. But if I'd have gotten the 4 actions, I'd have made it, but I only got the 2 because I didn't have any influence left. So, turn 5. Guess who wins initiative?
With one guy, left.
This guy.
Because, fickle so mistress.
I again went up to the bike, but didn't kill it. And that was pretty much it for me. I only had one guy left. It was sitting on 1 health. So it was just a matter of finality at this point.
So, yeah. Hired hands, Zerelda, and the bike all get a shoot into him. So 7 goes down. He only had 1 hit point.
Yeah.
And game over. The ambush is successful. Zerelda Kincaid, the Iron Horse, and a hired hand. The 2 hired hands, actually. The one in the rocks and the one in the forest are the 4 models to survive. So, let's see. I think she's 115, 60. So I had like 230 points out of my 750 that survived. So it was a close game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was. I mean, there for a while, until that irradiate hit Carpathian, I thought I was going to take you.
Bring it back.
And then as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, man.
In trouble.
I'm in trouble.
So, afterthoughts.
I thought this was a good game. I had fun.
I did as well. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was fun to try out a different scenario. Now, obviously, the scenario is unbalanced. I mean, Ryan gets stuck in the middle, mostly in the open with no cover. I get to come in to Ryan from every side I want to. If I had wanted to be a D-bag, I'd have just stacked heavy on one side and went like that. But instead, I went ahead and actually surrounded. Because it was narrative, damn it. We want the feel of the surrounding them thing.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Because, like you said, you could have just stacked everything on one side and then just slowly rolled through everything. Because I, you know, spread out. And then, you know, you did too. So it made for a better fight instead of just, you know, I'm cornering up over here and we're going to fight in a group. So. But again, this is a narrative scenario, so you shouldn't be playing with someone that's going to deploy like a D-bag anyway.
Yeah, no chiseling.
Yeah, chiseler, no chiseling.
I think I said earlier, you know, we both took what we felt were pretty... They were tame but usable lists, so they didn't have anything in it that struck us as, like, insane.
Yeah, well, and I'm limited. My Enlighten is my second faction, so it's not as filled out, so...
Plus, it's your first game with them.
Yeah, and I just don't have a lot of the crazy stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of those things are good, but like I don't have just all the options that like I do with my lawman.
Right. So, I mean, we had hired hands. Creation 7 has random action points, which can be great, but can also be really bad. Enlightened in general, I think, you know, we're pretty slow. Most of you guys are what, like move 4? So they're not quick. Yeah,
4 and 5.
Considering pretty much all the outlaws are 6, which kind of is, I guess, supposed to make up for their 2 action points. So, I mean, they were good. They were workable lists, but they weren't optimized by any stretch, I don't think.
Yeah, they were just lists made for a fun scenario.
Map. I thought the map seemed good. I mean, there's not a lot of cover for Ryan, but again, narratively speaking, he's supposed to be in ambush. So obviously they're on the back foot and mostly in the open. And... again, you know, moving only 4 to 5 inches makes it really hard for you to get to cover. I mean, 7 kind of got there just by nature of going after Jesse and Cole, who were in the trees. And then Carpathian played ring around that rock for a turn or two.
Yeah. But, I mean, anyone that he was facing had a clear shot at him. It was just, you know, keeping my back to the wall so I wasn't getting surrounded 360.
Yeah, no doubt. But when you looked at... from like an outside perspective, when you looked at the table, it looked full. Like there was a lot of terrain. It's just you happened to be in like the dead center of none of it.
Yeah, I said something the other night when we played it. I thought that the road actually helps with that, because looking at it, you see this road that's terrain as well, but it has no effect on it. So it looks fuller than it actually is. But I thought it was fine. I thought for what the scenario was, it absolutely made sense.
And that road, visually speaking, like that road makes sense. Because if you'd just been standing like in an open section of the table near no cover, someone walking by would have been like, that doesn't make any damn sense at all. Why would you do that? But with the road there, you're like, well, he's walking down the road when he got ambushed. And then you're like, oh, I totally get it now. Because you can visually see the road.
Roger.
RJ-1027 and the new reliable rule. I like it. The new reliable rule, this all RJ-1027 weapons get to reroll the first natural one of a shoot action. So it's kind of exciting. Like, you know, we'd roll a one and be like, nah, RJ, and, you know, throw the die a second time. It's a really small addition to the game. I think it's quicker and less confusing than the previous attempt. The last FAQ they did was if you had an RJ-1027 and your roll to hit was a 10, then you rolled a second dice and if it was a 10, you got a free action point. Which was cool, and I don't think that really unbalanced the game either, because how often are you going to get 2 tens in a row? But it was double rolls, and then, you know, if it was someone who didn't know the rule, you had to explain what the hell it worked out. It seemed a little confusing, whereas this one's just, hey, it's RJ-powered, I get to reroll a 1.
I like it as well. It just seemed to be easier, because it was, you know, I need 7s to hit, chuck my dice, say there's a 1, just re-roll it. You already know what you need. You see the 1, you just roll it again. You don't have to recalculate anything. I don't know. I just thought it was a nice little addition to a rule that a lot of people have that really had very limited use, you know.
Well, it had no use.
Previously, yeah.
I mean, previous to Waylon picking it up, it did nothing other than shut your gun down if you got hit by interference, which there's only like 4 models in the game that have interference, so... it really was almost a non-existent rule. So they gave it a rule, and I like it. It's a nice perk. It doesn't. I don't think it changes the game. It certainly doesn't seem to shift it, I think, in one way or the other, but it's a nice little addition.
Agreed.
Especially since we both had a lot of RJ guns. I think pretty much every gun we had was RJ-powered.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the other thing is that we ended up having to look up a decent amount of stuff just because we hadn't really played in a while. And then all the FAQs just to make sure things still worked the way that they worked. But for the most part, things didn't change. Mostly it was just hand-to-hand, close combat stuff because we don't do a lot of it. Dave has Warrior Nation, so he does a lot of hand-to-hand. So, but when we're playing him, we just say, how's this work? And he tells us. You know, we're lazy. We don't actually look it up and learn the rules. We just rely on him.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So I thought that was... I thought the new rule, this is my first game under the new FAQ rules. So I thought it was well. I thought it was a good set of FAQs. I think they're working out well and smoothing out the game.
Yeah. I like it. Goddamn, 25-page FAQ, though. Ugh.
Yeah. But I mean, that was, I mean, they just printed all the rules. I bet maybe only 40% of the rules actually had changes to them.
Yeah, that's true. Pretty much every special rule is listed in there, and a lot of them have not changed. They just changed the ones that were either not clear, confusing, or, you know, just didn't function well. So, I mean, yeah, but still, it is what it is. We did look a lot up, but end of the year, we're looking for second edition. So it'll be,
yeah,
it'll be really interesting towards the end of this year to see how the game comes around.
I'm ready for second edition.
As am
let's,
I.
Let's see what it brings on. Hopefully it's not too different. It's more just kind of like this FAQ, just, you know, clearing things up, making things a bit smoother.
Right. I mean, like you said, we don't play a lot of combat, so we had to look a lot of that up. We'll rectify that as we go along.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that was Bush, and that was scenario number two, Bushwhacked. Good fun. Definitely, if you have the narrative book, try those out. One of the things I definitely want to do is, you know, we're going to continue playing these throughout the year, and a number of them take place in town. And one of the things I definitely want to do at some point is play with civilians. Because what you can do is you can grab a civilian and use them as a human shield. And for the outlaws, well, for any kind of not lawmen faction, it totally makes sense that you would do that.
Yeah, we've never actually done it yet, so it'll be neat to see
how it
works, if it's actually, you know, viable to do, if it's worth it. So I mean, I'm looking forward to that as well.
It's a meat shield. I'm kind of excited. And then the other thing is, you know, previous to now, we don't really have the models to do that with. But because I'm bought some round adapters for my dwarfs to bring them up to 30 mil for AOS for the Holy Wars, I actually have 30 mil bases. So we don't have the civilian models, but now we have the correct size bases. So we can just slap some random Warhammer dudes on there to be our poor schmucks.
Put some ladies of the West out there when we get them.
Yeah.
Say civilians.
Definitely going to have to order them.
Yeah.
Pretty excited for that, too. The fact that all the stuff that Wayland's looking to push, and really happy currently with the way that whole purchase is looking to pan out for us Wild West Exodus players.
Yeah.
And really, that's the only thing. It's the only depressing thing that we're not going to Adepticon is we have to miss the first jump in from Wayland at that.
Yeah, that's really what I'm going to miss. But it just wasn't worth driving all the way up there for one day. It's a 3.5-hour drive.
Right.
So I just couldn't justify doing it for just a one-day tournament.
So, yeah. Last year, like I said earlier in the show, I track my games played. And last year, we played a lot of Kings of War.
Yeah.
So, this year, I mean, it's not like we're going to try and reverse it and be like, this year, 9 out of our 12 shows are going to be Wild West Exos. But we're definitely going to try and even it up and, you know, keep it a little more balanced because we want both communities to listen to the show. And especially with all the big news happening Wild West Exos right now, we want to really try and also encourage those guys to remember that this game is still awesome and that they should play it. So we're going to do a fair bit more Wild West Exos stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's it. So that's us. We appreciate everybody tuning in and listening to us still. Happy New Year, everybody that's here. If you have any questions or comments, feel free. You can post it in the comment section under the blog and thehobbyheroes.com. You can email us at joe or at ryan@thehobbyheroes.com. And you can find us on Facebook by searching The Hobby Heroes. And then finally, I'm also on Twitter at Hobby Hero Cast, or Hobby Heroes Cast. And that's all I got. So thanks again for listening, guys. We appreciate it. And we will be back in February. Any last words, Ryan?
No. Happy New Year. Hopefully everything goes well. 2016 was not a good one.
No, it was a rough year for the celebrities, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a good year for me, but if you had a bad one, hopefully 2017's better.
There you go. So, thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good one.